Hello and welcome to the Honest Politics Podcast. My name's Alex Gamsik and I'm the founder of Honest Politics LLC. What we're going to do today is look at a policy process, the way in which policies get passed. So if you have an issue that you really care about, think about it for a second and think about how likely it is to get through both houses of Congress, the President, and the Supreme Court. So it might be a little difficult, right? Well, the best way to figure out how to get your policy passed is to learn about policy processes like the Advocacy Coalition Framework. I've also talked about PET and Three Streams on previous podcasts. You can check them out. So we're going to focus on a paper that I wrote in graduate school. So if you want a graduate level education from a Master of Public Policy on how to get things passed using a real world example, then keep listening. I'm going to get the commercial out of the way real quick. If you want to skip ahead, don't tell anybody, but go ahead and do it. I'll be back soon. So let's get started reading this paper. It was probably the most important paper I've ever written, and you can keep listening to find out why, but you should get a general feel for it. This was written in 2016. Okay, so here's the introduction. On Election Day, November 4th, 2008, California's voters passed Proposition 2 with 63% of the vote. This was a significant advancement for farm animals' rights by mandating that veal calves, pregnant pigs, and egg-laying hens have enough room to stand, turn around, and extend their limbs. The legislation mostly impacted hens, because California was a much greater egg producer than a veal or pork producer. This paper applies the Advocacy Coalition Framework to California's Proposition 2, with a focus on agenda setting and policy formation. After a brief problem description, the paper shall consider how animal rights came onto the agenda and the competing coalitions that emerged. The economic coalition is then given special consideration, followed by a review of technical learning and focusing events. This paper concludes that hens' rights should advance through statewide referenda similar to California's. This next section is titled The Problem. California was the fifth largest egg-producing state in America, with 5.8 billion eggs laid by 18 million hens in 2013. Prior to Proposition 2, almost all of these hens lived in cramped battery cages without the space to extend normal chicken behavior, like dust bathing or stretching their wings. These hens only lived for a tenth of their natural lifespan, and male chicks were killed immediately after hatching. The cage floors were not designed for standing, and leg deformities have resulted. Despite these hardships, federal legislation was concerned only with egg quality and humane slaughter, not the hens' lives. A lack of federal legislation is due to the powerful agricultural lobby, which feared economic setbacks from any and all animal rights legislation. Scholars Lutz and Lutz concluded that state referenda were the best venue for policy change concerning animal rights. Now the agenda setting section. Rights for farm animals rarely capture public attention, yet the public would support animal rights measures if provided the opportunity. In response to the open-ended question, what do you think is the most important problem facing this country today? Animal rights was not mentioned at all. Yet other polls show that 54% of people are very or somewhat concerned with the way farm animals are treated. This means that people will respond to protect animals when prompted, but will not come up with the issue on their own. For animal rights to have come onto the agenda in California, it needed support from elites. Even though California has a century-old history of statewide referendums, elites must propose those initiatives because the complicated referenda processes are difficult for an ordinary person to follow. In addition, the enormity of the state requires a well-funded campaign to have a chance at passing any measure. Therefore, public interest groups must be the ones to get ballot initiatives started in California. Lutz and Lutz described the animal rights issue broadly as a fight between economic interest groups and animal rights groups. These competing groups will often team up into coalitions based on policy beliefs. Lutz and Lutz ran a study to find what factors lead some states to adopt animal rights laws in comparison to other states. They found that states with more traditionalist political cultures had weaker animal protection laws. Therefore, with a traditional core beliefs system, meaning southern states, border states, and some southwest states, they were less likely to have laws supporting animal rights. Another scholar, Daniel Elazar, created the idea of a traditionalist political culture in 1984. Traditionalist cultures are more agrarian and value hierarchical power structures like that of a plantation. Traditionalists champion the status quo and avoid change, which would explain why states with traditionalist cultures would not want to change their scant animal rights laws. Two other factors that were found to affect animal rights laws of a state were average education and percent of labor force in agriculture. More educated people, perhaps warier of where their food comes from, came from states with greater animal rights laws than states where the agricultural industry controlled a larger portion of the economy. Lutz and Lutz concluded that of all the venues for policy change regarding animal rights, state referenda were the best. Since state legislatures and the federal government were under pressure from the agricultural industry, the public was the best policy broker capable of change. Although California's agricultural industry employs a lot of people, California has a diversified economy, educated population, and a non-traditionalist culture. That makes the state ripe for animal rights policy change. Now, I just want to talk a little bit. We're halfway through the paper. One of the keys of public policy writing is not to include a lot of details or fluff words or transitions. So it's not like great flowy writing. It's more just a lot of facts condensed, and key critical details might even just be one or two words within a sentence. Looking at the totality of what I've read so far shows how horribly animals are treated, how powerful agricultural lobbies are in keeping any kind of animal rights legislation from passing, and it shows that people have been looking into this when it comes to advocating for animal rights. All right, so now we're going to go on to the next section titled Coalitions. Just so you know, I'm going to speed up my talking through the more specific details of this individual case, and I'm going to slow down when there are more broad lessons to take away. When examining how Proposition 2 passed in California, the actors are essential. In the ACF framework, which is Advocacy Coalition Framework, individual actors coalesce into coalitions in order to advocate their shared belief systems. Two distinct coalitions emerged as a result of this ballot initiative. The first coalition named themselves Yes on Prop 2. This coalition consisted mainly of animal rights organizations. Prominent actors include the Humane Society, California Veterinary Medical Association, Center on Food Safety, Consumer Federation of America, California Democratic Party, and both California senators. The second coalition was named Californians for Safe Food. This coalition consisted mostly of business interests. Prominent actors included the American Veterinary Medical Association, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, the California Chamber of Commerce, the National Animal Interest Alliance. Interestingly, some animal rights groups were on the No Coalition, and some business interests were on the Yes Coalition, meaning the coalitions were not ironclad in their pro-animal or pro-business leanings. In the ACF framework, coalitions are defined by their core beliefs, policy beliefs, and secondary beliefs. It's much easier if you see a diagram of this. So search Advocacy Coalition Framework in images and you'll see it. The core belief of protecting animal welfare did not completely correlate with the pro-Prop 2 or anti-Prop 2 coalitions. For example, the Sierra Club was on the Yes on Prop 2 coalition, and the American Veterinary Medical Association was on Californians for Safe Food coalition. This is an example of two organizations that had the same core belief, protecting animal welfare, but were on opposing coalitions. Organizations like the California Chamber of Commerce and other business interests had fundamentally different core beliefs from the aforementioned rights groups. They placed profit over the welfare of animals and regarded the hens as mere property. Again, some businesses' interests ignored this economic approach and took the side of Yes on Prop 2, showing that core policy beliefs do not perfectly align with the coalition they belong to. However, the actors' more narrow policy beliefs were a consistent predictor of coalition allegiance. One policy belief was that having enough room to move around would be better for the chickens than the battery cages. Yes on Prop 2 participants agreed with this statement. Some organizations, on the other hand, like the American Veterinary Medical Association, said the battery cages benefited the birds by protecting them from predators and the climate. The second policy belief was that the economic hardships associated with forcing a larger cage system would be unbearable. The Californians for Safe Food participants agreed with this statement. Naturally, businesses would have to raise egg prices to make up for the mandate of increasing animal space. The Yes Coalition disagreed, believing that egg prices would rise by negligible margins. So, a quick aside, basically there's the yes side and the no side, and some business or animal rights interests were on the side you wouldn't expect. So, when you see this in public policy, you'll see, you know, Muslims who agree with a Muslim ban, or you'll see, like, gun rights people trying to enact gun laws. Basically, things don't always line up perfectly, but in the general sense, pro-business people were against animal rights, and animal rights people were pro-animal rights. Now, the next section is called Dominance of the Economic Coalition. The Californians for Safe Food Coalition was the dominant coalition, the status quo, of the policy subsystem before Proposition 2 passed. The dominance of economic interests was also apparent in the federal government of the United States. One scholar complained that compared to the European Union standards, the United States was lagging in terms of animal rights. Her name was Jessica Brunswick-Norris, and she said a 1999 EU directive banned the use of battery cages by 2012, which addressed the psychological needs of farm animals for the first time. She blamed America's over-centralizing economic interests for the lack of progress on this issue in the states. In 1987, there were 1,200 egg producers. There were 2,500 egg producers in America. You know, I'm actually studying to be an accountant right now, and my lack of grasp on basic numbers is astounding. By 2002, there were only 650. So there was less than half egg producers, even though egg production has increased every year since. So there's fewer companies producing more eggs. I just added that part in. This was due to companies using the strategy of vertical integration to take over every part of the egg production business. Well, that's kind of horizontal integration, but you could say both are happening. Brunswick-Norris cited PETA's successful campaign against the fast food industry as a way for animal rights groups to change their standards. In the late 90s, PETA pressured McDonald's and Burger King to adopt standards set forth by United Egg Producers and the Animal Welfare Council. Even though economic profit is a core belief for industry giants like McDonald's, the pressure from interest groups was enough to change their behavior. The federal government was a much more difficult venue for change. Before passage of the Agriculture Bill of 2014, United Egg Producers and the Humane Society of the United States agreed on treatment standards for hens. This small but powerful coalition came together on the policy belief that at least some federal laws should set standards for hens. They attempted to get an amendment on the much larger agricultural bill, but it was struck down when opponents claimed the amendment was neither scientific nor cost-effective. They also feared that it would set a precedent for the passage of animal rights laws and would snowball costs for the egg industry. So despite three-quarters of all Americans agreeing that there should be some humane treatment for farm animals, the economic interests of the agricultural sector were too strong to allow for any federal legislation. Poultry are 90% of the 10 billion animals killed for food products in the United States each year. But they were excluded from the Humane Slaughter Act. This shows that huge exemptions are given to satisfy the agricultural industry's hold on the policy subsystem. So the next section is called Technical Learning and Focusing Events. The Advocacy Coalition framework describes technical learning and focusing events as reasonings for shifting policy beliefs and the ability of one coalition to overcome the other. In this paper, I said the economic interests of the egg producers were the dominant coalition in California, which means they were the status quo, And Proposition 2 changed that so that the animal rights people briefly overcame the economic coalition. And we're going to get into kind of how that happened. In the case of Proposition 2, technical learning had a greater impact than focusing events. Animal rights groups often film behind-the-scenes looks at the animal production industry. They hoped that their exposure of cruel practices would convince people to take their sides. Mercy for Animals released a documentary that showed baby chicks dying while caught in machinery and other cruel methods the egg industry used. This documentary was a focusing event in that it changed public opinion and shocked the policy subsystem of egg production. It also showed a form of technical learning because this was the first time that many people had learned about the industry's inhumane methods. There has been a recent trend among the American public to want to know where their food is coming from and how it will be prepared. Labeling of this kind is much better in the EU, and there's a growing demand for similar labeling in the United States, like free range or cruelty free or all that. Richards, Allender, and Fang, who are scholars, compared people's willingness to pay for cage-free eggs after being presented with advertisements from each coalition. They concluded that the advertisements in support of Proposition 2 had a greater effect on people's willingness to pay than the advertisements against Proposition 2. These advertisements exposed people to the egg industry's tactics, which many people were not aware of before, although the researchers said that the ads were based on emotion and not substantive policy. This still counted as technical learning in the advocacy coalition framework. The common assumption among people prior to viewing the ads was that farm animals were happy, which was being quickly debunked by the Yes to Prop 2 campaign ads. The researchers concluded that this small amount of bad news regarding animal welfare was enough to outweigh many strong but conventional economic arguments on the other side. That was a direct quote, by the way. The economical agricultural industry could only lose their dominance on the policy arena with technical learning about the egg industry's practices. Although some may claim the documentary released by Mercy for Animals was a focusing event, it was more a call to a form of technical learning. So now the conclusion. The advocacy coalition framework is best used when observing environmental or scientific policy matters. This is because the concepts of technical learning and competing coalitions are a natural fit for areas that require a lot of technical knowledge. Although the issue of giving hens enough space to move around may seem like a straightforward issue, it requires large-scale technical learning because few Americans know or want to know how hens are treated. When presented with the facts about animal abuse in food systems, many Californians changed their policy beliefs. So just knowing a bit about it changed their beliefs. They voted for Proposition 2 because animal rights organizations were able to navigate California's ballot initiative process, bring the issue onto the agenda, and form a coalition to advance their policy. Despite the strong economic interests of Californians for Safe Food, that coalition, the Yes to Prop 2 coalition became dominant in the policy subsystem. By getting the initiative on the ballot and advertising effectively, the referendum passed by an overwhelming 63%. This helped get cage-free initiatives onto the agenda in Washington, Oregon, and Michigan. By working in more states and appealing to the public as policy brokers, animal rights organizations can avoid the agricultural industry's roadblocks and protect hens' rights. All right, so if you want the work cited so that you can read the scholars' articles yourselves, I highly recommend it. Just send an email message to alex at honestpoliticsllc.com. This was, I'm just going to say it, definitively the most important paper I've ever written because it showed a few things. It showed how people change their beliefs and how those beliefs work. It showed how to get policies passed in a policy subsystem. And of course, it's only looking at one model for how policy changes, and it works best with scientific or environmental issues. But the advocacy coalition framework, where there's two coalitions competing, and usually either a focusing event or technical knowledge or a campaign like this is the way that policies get passed, where one coalition becomes dominant over another. Doing further research on how animals are treated in this country boggles my mind. The the videos of slaughterhouses on YouTube where there's just pools of blood everywhere, and the animals sometimes can see what's happening and they're struggling and they're trying to run away. And they're not even hurting the handlers. They're just trying to escape this hellscape that slaughterhouses are. And, I was listening to a recent podcast and they're like, we want to make slaughterhouses safe and healthy for everybody. And I'm just sitting there like, you think it's safe and healthy to like murder billions of animals in this horrific way? Like, and I know there's some like quote humane provisions, but as you just saw, 9 billion out of the 10 billion animals killed for food in the US each year are not in the Humane Slaughter Act. And I know there's some laws around it, but people like the Trump administration are weakening those laws. Republicans want to weaken animal rights laws and, slaughter animals as efficiently without regard to their humanity as possible. So these are just facts, and if you don't like them, that's too bad. I know I get very heated over this topic. Another thing I want to discuss quickly is a little argument I got onto over the internet. Not an argument, more so a debate, because I think pro-animal people are usually on the same side, although this paper reveals that at least a few animal rights organizations may think that keeping hens in battery cages so small that they're like three chickens cramped into the size of a piece of paper. They might think that's okay because at least they don't have to deal with the rain outside. But ignoring people like that, I was discussing with a vegan on the internet, whether you should do flexitarian diet or whether that's just performative liberalism, I guess is the term, where like I'm just pretending to care about an issue, but I'm not actually going to lift a finger to stop it. Even though I went from eating meat. After this paper, I started reducing the amount of meat in my diet and making more vegan choices when it came to eggs or cheeses or milk. And I'll just discuss it real quick. If you're more into the policy process, you can move on to the next episode. But if you care about animal welfare, I just want to explain my flexitarianism real quick. I went from eating meat about 3 times a day to about 3 times a week, which is basically the same as 6 or 7 people becoming vegetarian, which I think has a big impact. But it only has a big impact if enough people do it. Same with veganism. Like, one vegan is not going to change anything. It's not going to save one animal's life. But if you have 5% of people become vegan, a 5% drop in demand for meat is going to make a difference. Big companies are going to lower production, so there'll be fewer animals tortured and killed, which is kind of where I got in the debate with the vegan because I am making a difference by reducing my demand and making vegan choices. I'm supporting companies like Impossible Foods, Beyond Meat, Morningstar that make vegetarian products. I'm supporting them by buying their stuff. I'm not buying meat from the grocery store. I will occasionally eat meat that is prepared by someone else, because, I think of it as like you go to a party in college and there's pepperoni pizza and cheese pizza. Say they're gonna throw the rest of the pepperoni pizza in the trash. Why don't I just eat it? You know what I mean? Like, it's not affecting the demand curve for meat if I eat this pizza or not, just because it has pepperoni on it. I'm not saving any pigs by not eating it. I focus more on that kind of side of things. And the next issue a vegan might bring up will be, well, I just think it's a moral issue. I'm morally opposed to eating meat. And I think that's where I come in, where I'm not morally opposed to eating meat. I'm morally opposed to how it's produced, the torturing of the animals itself. So I'll happily eat meat if it's like found meat. Which I think is a funny term. I eat found meat. But I do eat found meat because it doesn't affect the economics of it. It doesn't affect the companies that are making or producing or torturing the animals. I don't know where the rest of the footage went, so this microphone's not as good. But anyway, if you made it to the end, thank you so much for listening to the Honest Politics podcast on what I think is the most important paper I've written and the start of my change in my lifestyle. I can only hope that you find it in your hearts to change your lifestyle even a little bit. I know for me, it just started as a trip to Chipotle and saying, Wait, if I get the vegetarian thing, I get free guac. That's awesome. Free guacamole is always welcome. And once you've had meat off of your diet for a while, two things happen. You start to not miss it, and the few occasional times you do have meat, if it's well prepared, it'll taste amazing. So I think even meat lovers can find solace in a flexitarian diet. Anyway, that's all for today. Hope you have a great rest of your day or evening. I'll see you next time as we seek to discover more of the stories behind the statistics. There had been a recent trend among American publics to n what? Okay. The core belief of protecting animal welfare did not completely correlate with the prop it, the pro prop t okay. The animal coalition framework, okay. I guess you could call it that, right?